I used to have a woman call me several times a day. She had a physical problem, and I knew that she was in a lot of pain. But she was a person who was really difficult to help, because not only did she tell me all her symptoms over and over again, but she told me all the problems in her family and of the woman next door and the woman three doors up from that. And she'd be on the phone for about an hour and 15 minutes. And I used to dread her coming on the phone. Well, one night my telephone was ringing just one after the other all night, and I was really busy. It was almost midnight, and I was looking forward very much to going to bed, and the telephone rang. And I thought, I know who that is. At first, I wasn't going to answer her. And then I thought, if I don't, she'll keep on ringing. So I answered her, and she said, oh, Myrtle, I've been trying to get through to you all night, and your telephone has been so busy. Now, her problem was an obstruction in her bowel. And she said, so when I couldn't get through to you, I went in the bath, and I put lots of lovely suds in the bath, and I had a bubble bath, and I lay there, and I soaked. And she said, while I was in the bath, I was lying there thinking, I wonder what God's doing right now. She said, Myrtle, do you know what God would be doing right now? Oh, what a question for midnight, and I was tired. So I said to her, well, I'll tell you something I know he's not doing. And she said, well, what's that? And I said, well, he wasn't soaking his bum in the bath. And suddenly I began to laugh, because I could picture a big God with a big gray beard sitting in a big square bath up in heaven and pulling out his hair and saying, what a day I've had with this world, with these nutcases that are in this world. And I couldn't stop laughing. And I laughed and laughed and laughed. And she said, what's so funny? So I told her that I visualized this picture, and she began to laugh. And, you know, after I hung up, I got into bed, and my bed was shaking. I was laughing so much. She was the first person on the phone the next morning. And she said, Myrtle, when I got into bed, I laughed for another hour at just imagining God in the bath and pulling out his hair. And she said, when I got up this morning, everything passed away very effortlessly and naturally. She got her healing. You see, she'd oiled the works. And sometimes that's what we need to do. We need to oil the works with a little joy as well as the peace. They go together very well. And one time I was lecturing in Copenhagen, and I was actually giving this lecture, There Is No Way to Peace, Peace is the Way, and it was still very new to me. And I was working about it. And I came out of my hotel room in the morning, and I looked over the balcony, and the lake was, it was very windy, very, very windy that day and wet. And the lake was all wavy and stormy. And you couldn't see the reflection of the trees or the sun or anything in it. And I went back into the room, and I kept on writing. And then I came out about noon, and the sun had come out, and the lake was like a mirror. It was like glass. It was just so calm and so peaceful that you could see the trees and the flowers and the birds in the sky and the sun. And it was so clear that if it was a picture, you wouldn't have known which was the right side up. And I saw, why, that's exactly the point I'm trying to make. That if you're trying to be healed, if you have a problem of any kind, and you're trying to be healed of that problem, you can't be healed while you're like the lake that was all distorted and windy and ruffled and upset. But when you're at peace and you're calm, then you can see yourself clearly as God's reflection. And believe me, that just helped me so much, because it helped me in my practice, that when my phone would go and people were calling me for help, I would say to myself, I'm not going to pray about the symptoms. I'm not going to pray about what's going on in this person's body or their life. I'm going to pray for peace. I'm going to know that the peace of God that passeth all understanding is flooding our hearts and minds right here and now, where these floods of trouble seem to be flowing. Right here is the peace. And honestly, it worked. It really worked. And when you could get the other person to be calm, to not be excited, to not be impressed by the physical picture or what was happening in their lives or their bodies, that it made such a difference, that it made their prayerful effort so much easier. And you know, Rudyard Kipling in his poem, If, he says, if you can keep your head while all about are losing theirs and blaming it on you. So he had got the same truth, the same picture, to be calm, to be at peace, to keep your head, to be level-headed. Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, had many problems to meet in her life, including the desertion of students. And life must have been really, really difficult for her, because so many people didn't understand this science that had been revealed to her, and it would have been difficult for them to understand it. But she understood peace. She had to demonstrate peace in her own life time after time. And one time she had this article printed in the Boston Globe in December 1904, and it's entitled How Strife May Be Stilled. And this article has helped me many times when there's been bombing and problems in Northern Ireland and in different countries in the world, even in the Gulf War and recent things that have been happening around the world. This article says, follow that which is good. A Japanese may believe in a heaven for him who dies in defense of his country. But the steadying, elevating power of civilization destroys such illusions and should overcome evil with good. Nothing is gained by fighting, but much is lost. Peace is the promise and reward of rightness. Governments have no right to engraft into civilization the burlesque of uncivil economics. War is in itself an evil, barbarous, devilish. Victory in error is defeat in truth. War is not in the domain of good. War weakens power and must finally fall, pierced by its own sword. The principle of all power is God, and God is love. Whatever brings into human thought or action an element opposed to love is never requisite, never a necessity, and is not sanctioned by the law of God, the law of love. The founder of Christianity said, my peace I give unto you. Not as the world giveth, give I unto you. Christian Science reinforces Christ's sayings and doings. The principle of Christian Science demonstrates peace. Christianity is the chain of scientific being, reappearing in all ages, maintaining its obvious correspondence with the scriptures, and uniting all periods in the design of God. The first commandment in the Hebrew Decalogue, thou shalt have no other gods before me, obeyed, is sufficient to still all strife. God is the divine mind, hence the sequence. Had all peoples one mind, peace would reign. God is Father, infinite, and this great truth when understood in its divine metaphysics, will establish the brotherhood of man, end wars, and demonstrate on earth peace, goodwill toward men. That's the end of that little article, which has helped me so many, many times. Some years ago in Northern Ireland, when the Board of Lectorship in Boston asked all the Christian Science churches throughout the world to hold a special lecture on peace, and our church was going to have one of these lectures. So to support that lecture, I had been looking up things in the writings of Mary Baker Eddy, and in the Bible, on peace. And I'd written out many verses and things that I liked, and I was really trying to get a better understanding of what peace was. And we were having a pre-lecture meeting one evening, and at the time I had a bed and breakfast, and I had five permanent people, men, who stayed with me, and I did evening meals. And I had been asked to go to a hospital to visit a woman who'd had many heart operations. This woman was not a Christian Scientist, but she would come to our church sometimes and would read. She'd just gone through a very big operation. And her daughter, her only child, called me, and she was very disturbed. And she said, "My mother has had her operation, but it's not a success." And she said she had been sitting with her, but her mother was unconscious. And she said, "Myrtle, would you just go and see her and just pray with her or something?" She said, "Because I don't know what to do." So I said I would go along that afternoon to see what I could do. And I had to go into a store in town to get all the groceries for dinner that evening and breakfast the next day. And I had about five plastic bags of shopping. And I went along to the hospital. And they hadn't even moved this woman out of the operating theater. She was on a life support machine. And the doctor said to me, "It's only a matter of time. We think that maybe an hour or something, and she'd be gone." So the woman appeared to be unconscious, and I sat there and I didn't quite know what to do or how to pray for the woman. I wasn't too sure about what she would want and what should I be doing. And I began to think about this pre-lecture meeting that we were having in our church, and that I had been praying to understand peace better. So I began to pray to know that because God is a peaceful God, and he's always at peace, and that he's omnipresent, that he fills all space, that he filled the space in this hospital where we were, in this operating theater.